Welcome to the Brew Drink Run podcast, brought to you by the only website that promotes brewing your own beer, consuming the best craft beers in the world, and then running off the calories, brewdrinkrun.com.
Welcome to episode number 176 of the Brew Drink Run.
the Brew Drink Run.
We're done.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in.
Brew Drink Run podcast. My name is Lee.
I'm Kurth. This is Keith.
I'm Raymond.
Do you know what threw me off? Raymond, tell everybody what you're doing during the intro of the podcast today.
Oh, I was looking at a catalog for violins.
All right. That was it.
Random. Sorry, I threw you there.
I can't add any more to it than that, folks. If you'd like to review a different episode of the show, please do so on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you grab your podcasts. Ratings and reviews are how more people find the show. Or you can tell a friend, post about the show on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. If you do any of those things, be sure to tag us at Brew Drink Run. This is our big show where we talk about beer and running and home brewing, but especially beer, because that's what we're all super into these days. Keith, what are we starting the show off with today?
Oh, we are going to start off by drinking local with some Moon River Brewing Company's Dixie Crystal Triple, Belgian style ale. It says right on there, 9.4% ABV. This particular bottle was bottled on 11/15/16, and I think this would be the first run of bottling they ever did.
So, I would presume so.
Yeah, I don't think there was... I know this was the first beer, and I don't think there was one before that date. It sounds about the right time frame. So I think this is part of their very first bottling. They've done a couple since then, maybe one or two.
Definitely the Swamp Fox IPA I've seen, and it seems like there's another one. So
there might be. I can't remember. All the labels are very, very much very similar in design. So they're all going to kind of look the same with different words on them. So that probably is creating a little bit of the haze in our brain about what we've seen on the labels. So that's what we got here.
Well, you mentioned drinking local. Savannah, Georgia is where we're based out of. And Moon River Brewing Company is the first modern definitely brew pub. I mean, they've been here and they kind of led the good fight in Georgia for beer laws to change in the last couple of years. John Pinkerton Pink one of their co-owners has been big on making sure that's changed to the Georgia Craft Brewers Guild. Mm-hmm. And with some of the recent changes, Moon River can now also make their own or bottle their own beer.
In addition
to having it available in the brew pub, they can
also
actually distribute.
Sell growlers as well. So that was a good change for them. Mm-hmm. People can leave with to-go packaging, and it is nice to see their product on our shelves, and something that they could send elsewhere. Nice to think about them maybe having a handful of bottles up in the Atlanta area or something like that, just to sort of represent a little bit more of what Savannah has to offer.
Yeah, or even more. I mean, just Savannah being a tourist town where they're located, right in the heart of the historic district, people come in, have a meal, enjoy their beer, and can take a bottle of it or a growler of it home with them, share it with other people, and spread around that way as a nice souvenir, a nice little take-home for people who have visited the haunted pub, according to
TV
shows.
That's
right. Yes. So, Raymond, tell us a little bit about our bottle here. So, Keith alluded to the bottle. They have a kind of a standardized format for the bottles who have come out so far.
Well, there's a background kind of image, graphic image of their building in front of, I think it's their building.
I would assume so.
I hope it's not my house.
It's not your house. I don't think so.
That is so funny. I have never noticed that there's a photo overlay.
It's very really subtle because this bottle in particular is purple and black, and so the value difference is not particularly.
I think they're all that color. I mean, aren't they?
They're all the same. No,
I actually don't know that I've seen another one of their bottles on the shelves.
I think they're all uniform in design and but the wordage in different areas is going to be different to be.
So
obviously,
I made the assumption that they were changing the colors.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure that I know I've seen the Swamp Fox and it looked, identical, and I think that is one of those things where I kept seeing this bottle around. I was like, oh, I really got to pick one of these up. And I kind of had never really gotten around to it for whatever reason. Probably one of those, I've had the beer before at the at the brew pub, and I really like it. Just hadn't really gotten around to grabbing one. And then I saw, and it caught my eye, and I was like, oh, wait, that actually says Swamp Fox. Yeah. So, or is it the Rosemary one, or is
it's
it
the Rosemary?
Yeah, it's so it's the Rosemary Swamp Fox, yeah. So, so I, you know, kind of caught my eye that there was something different. So, so I think they're all pretty much universal in that sense. So,
well, then it's the image of the building on a purple, made in purple, up against a black, and they've got kind of an oval on the front. That has a logo, and then the writing in here. It's a pretty straightforward label, nothing fancy and aggressively visual here. Mm-hmm. But although their label is, I like the cut.
Yeah, it's a little, crescent moon.
Yeah, there's a little crescent moon as it comes. It wraps around. Right. It's attached on one side.
It reminds me of the brewery label. Some of those do that, where they have the kind of or it's Jester King. Jester King's labels kind of fit into each other.
Yeah, Jester King's do that. Yeah, same thing. Yep.
Yeah, so
it's not over the top in any way, but it is really, I think it's well done and it looks nice, and it's you know exactly what you're getting into. There's no having to figure it out, so I really like that about it. It's easy to see on the shelf.
And we've already poured this beer into glasses. This is a Belgian style triple. There are a couple of things that we're looking for in terms of like color and consistency. What have we got in the glass there?
Pretty good looking beer, very cloudy. It's got the color wise, it's in that kind of caramel looking color, particularly in the denser areas. Poured with a decent head. It's since faded to delace and a little more aggressive around the edge here, but kind of what you'd expect.
Yeah, it's pretty typical really very typical for a triple. It's got that kind of lighter but darker, light but dark, you know. It's not your doubles or your quads, but it does have a little bit of a maybe richer, deeper kind of caramel color to it for this. But I think it's probably falls right in with the, you know, standard SRM for this beer, maybe on the higher end or the darker end, but it's good. Yeah, I mean, I think it looks great.
So. Yep. I got to tell you, triples are one of those styles that I really love.
I'm a little bit opposite. I like them, and I learned to appreciate them more, but it's not one that I fell in love with in the early craft beer days for me. So
that's where I was going. It was definitely one of those early falling in love with craft beer. It was one of those styles that I really did like. And in the last couple of months to maybe the last year, I don't know that I've had two triples in that amount of time. And it's something that I used to be every other run. I was trying to find a triple I hadn't had before, or just buying one that I really liked to have it around. And I have not done that. I've been much more adventurous in some of my IPA pickups and things like that recently. Things that I did not love a couple of years ago in what I'm buying these days. So I'm excited to dive into this. Keith, what are you getting on the nose of Dixie Crystal?
It's got a nice kind of grainy sweetness to it. There's definitely a kind of sugary sweet presence going on there. Booze. It's a little bit touch hot on the nose. I think it's all fairly typical for a triple. Again, I don't drink a lot of triples. Sometimes they can have a real more of that kind of bubblegum estery kind of thing going on. I don't really get a whole bunch of that. There is sort of a general fruitiness to it, maybe a little bit of stone fruit or something like that going on. But it's I certainly get triple. Let's put it that way. There's nothing about this that's outside of the box for me.
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right. The maltiness is kind of what stands out for me. It's a kind of specific that note that I'm attributing to the malt, kind of a honey maltish kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
Honey malt's a good call.
And a little bit of a fruity acidity. So I wasn't going stone fruits. I was actually going pineapple a little bit, which is not something that is triple and not necessarily anything that anybody else is going to pick up on.
See, I get something very subtle and generic. I don't get anything very specific, and that kind of peachy kind of thing is sort of what I got. But you know what? It's all good.
Yeah, and that's not that far off, actually. The peach, when you were saying stone fruit, I was actually thinking figgy. I was thinking dark, but no, stone fruit with a pit. I see what you're saying. And honestly, my first sip, some of those characteristics that I was reading as kind of pineapple-y on the aroma are some of what I get on the flavor too. That's a little bit surprising.
Now I get what you're saying in the taste with the pineapple. I do get a little bit of that, which is definitely a fruity ester I wouldn't expect in a triple, but it's.
But that's part of the reason that I love good. A lot of Belgian beers is that the yeast is really this independent monster in this whole thing. And the breweries who've done this for hundreds of years have it down. They can reproduce that same beer every time. But for the mere mortals who don't do this every single time, there's a real play. And I feel like a lot of American craft breweries who are newer to this, doing these Belgian beers, that you really get some different products with it and that aren't necessarily what we consider to be the traditional Belgian setup with these. And I feel like this is, it's definitely pulling in things that I wouldn't associate with a traditional Belgian style triple. It doesn't mean that it's wrong or bad or anything. It's just not necessarily what I think of flavor wise. Now I am getting the sweetness, which I do attribute to a sugary kind of a sweetness. And we'll talk about the beer's name, I guess, in a second. Yep. And, And then the esters from the yeast were traditional, like you said, maybe more banana is what you're expecting, a little bit more of a creaminess to it, even though they are a lighter bodied beer. Mm-hmm. There can be something about the mouthful feel and the texture that's a little bit creamy to triples. Raymond, when you get done yawning, what are you getting on the taste here?
Not pineapple. I'm trying to find that, and that's not coming to me. It's...
Don't look for it. tell me what you've got.
It's so interesting that it's so often we talk about how we influence each other's kind of tastes here, but that one didn't. I still don't get it. I get something in there. I've been trying to place it.
I get a nice little peppery note on the finish from the yeast, which I like.
That's expected. I mean, that's something that's a different kind of
yeast character, going on. And it's got a nice kind of little, almost like a white pepper, like a milder, it's not super intense, but I like it. It's got a nice, character going on, just a little bit on the back end of that. So.
Yeah, the seasoning and calling it a pepper is not a bad. Yeah, it's not that far off for this one. I mean, because sometimes with wheat beers or Belgian style, medium fare beers, you do the coriander or you do intentional spicing, citrus peel, that sort of thing in those, and some of the spiciness reminds me of that, but I think it is the yeast.
Oh yeah, I don't think they added anything like that. In fact, this seems to be a fairly traditional.
I think the ingredient was,
attempt. Yeah, I mean, I don't think, and I think a lot of American craft breweries like to jazz them up with extra things.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting. I feel like some of these Belgian style, like when we first started getting into craft beer, like all those like hard to find Belgian beers were like all of the top rated ones, and people were like, that was so they had all these young bucks coming up drinking craft beer, but all the old guys who had been around for a while who truly know, they were, touting how amazing these beers are. And they are. I mean, we've been lucky enough to try Westie a couple of times and stuff like that. I mean, they're super complex, but the American palate has changed dramatically. And I think that this, these kind of Belgian style beers aren't quite as popular anymore. And if people are going to really sell them, they tend to be barrel aged or have a bunch of stuff in them. I mean, you just don't see a whole lot of straight quads or triples being brewed by American breweries these days. You see more, you'll see a bourbon barrel aged quad with cherries. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's the kind of thing that gets people excited. So it's not again, a whole lot of straight stuff. Now, being a brew pub, I think you have a little more flexibility with those kinds of things because you're filling up several taps. And you might have your standards. So I think it's interesting that I think for brew pubs, you're going to be sometimes, depending on your location and who you're marketing to, you're going to be changing over those a lot, and you want to do different, you're going to do a lots of different kinds of beers to keep people, regulars coming in. And, you see a lot of kind of straightforward things, and then you'll see variants on that or done in a cask or something like that. So,
well, the name of this beer, Dixie Crystal, alludes to the old Dixie Crystal Sugar Company that was located here in Savannah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it still around? Yeah. I remember there was a big fire.
Yeah, there was some kind of...
I don't keep up with the news. That was a long time
ago.
There
was a dust explosion or something that
dust
happens.
Dust explosion. Yeah. That was right. Yeah. That was pretty major. It was gnarly.
Yeah, it was pretty gnarly. I think they're still in business and still doing what they're doing.
Raymond, you were reading on the label. Does it talk about anything about the ingredients or anything they may have done with a fresh take? Or?
Well, I avoid reading the labels beforehand because, again, we don't want that influence. But this one says authentic Belgian yeast aroma with bright fruit and subtle spice dance on a bright, sparkling stage of imported Pilsner malt. And that's exactly what we've been describing for the last.
Yep. We're awesome.
You guys, finally, 176 episodes. We did
got
it.
One.
Yep, we got one. We are not shills.
We got one, boys.
Where's our bell?
Where's the bell?
I'm going to talk about that bell for the next 24 episodes.
I'm going to have to find the bell.
We're talking about that bell until we get the rest of them. All right. So, Dixie Crystal, Moon River, Triple.
Yeah.
You can get it in bottles. They're distributed through Savannah Distributing in the state. I think Savannah's theirs.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So if you are up in Atlanta, or you can ask for their beers. This was the first beer they bottled again back in November. I know the Rosemary Swamp Fox IPA has been bottled. Seems like one more. I tried to look and find. I didn't find.
Yeah, there might not be, and that might be the two that they've done thus far.
And I like that, Swamp Fox is one of their staple in house. They always have it, but they regularly do a cask of the Swamp Fox with rosemary. That's one of the things they do, and I like that for their second bottled release. They didn't just do Swamp Fox; they did the rosemary version of it because they're doing these 750 milliliter bottles. Mm-hmm. They're doing these large format bottles right now, kind of these souvenir take homey things. And I like that they did the kind of more special version.
Well, that one, the rosemary, won a GABF medal or something like that? Yeah,
it did.
It's not like you see so many beers that are using the same twists, like with vanilla bean or with whatever. But rosemary, you don't see a lot of.
I gotta be honest. That one never really played to me.
Yeah.
I thought it was just not my thing, but people really like it. And I mean, I'm like, and man, I was thrilled when I heard that they won some awards for it or something like that. I was like, damn, good for them.
That's so exciting. There's something about the herbalness of the rosemary with the aggressive, more aggressively hopped IPA.
Oh no, I think it was a great idea. Yeah. I just don't think it was for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's sort of like, and like anything, you can appreciate the fact that it's interesting, but the flavor for me was never great, but man, they were constantly brewing it after the first time they did it, and it's good. I mean, I'm good for them.
And as a home brewer, I mean, rosemary is a pretty easy thing an addition too. It's an easy plant to grow. It's if you don't grow it or don't want to grow it, chances are your neighbors can find fresh rosemary
around Savannah. You see it out growing out on the sidewalks.
but you could just walk over to a neighbor and get some rosemary and come back and throw it in your brew. And Raymond, have you thrown any rosemary in any beer lately?
No. Great. No. I have not been brewing. I'm still not there.
Oh, man.
Getting closer.
It looks great. I had a chance to see it a week or two ago and walk around your garage, and it's almost done. I mean, it's like, did electrical? Electrical's done, right?
The electrical's done. Yeah. It is completely painted on the inside as of today. It has air conditioning.
I can tell from your shirt.
Yep. That's what I was doing today.
Only thing that's left. We didn't dress up for the podcast.
Well, you know. Face and outfits made for radio here. All that's left is to put in a little deck around it, and that's about it.
Well, the flooring is the pergo.
Oh, I've got to do the flooring. But now that I've got air conditioning, I'm not as
it's not as
reluctant
to do that. Well, you need those boxes of planks.
Yes, they got
to
get
out of the room. Yeah. Well, that's exciting. The water is run. The sinks are in.
The water is run to it, but there's no sink yet.
In. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Because that's. You're almost there, man.
I've started working in it already.
Great.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Big thing is fence. We get our fence back next week.
Yeah. Keep the hooligans out.
You don't want people coming over while you're homebrewing and peeking in
the
windows.
That's right. They'll ask questions. They'll steal my recipes.
Yeah. They'll steal my recipes. It's like there's some spy unit from a local homebrewer going around. Oh, Lee, what you doing back here? grab them, go.
Sure. And then I see it on the service brewing tap list a few weeks later.
On Instagram. Come on into the tap room.
We're doing that. Raymond's Allagash clone. That's what we'll just call it that too.
Our dog's breakfast stout. Our dog's founders in parentheses breakfast stout. Hey, I'm telling you, man. Ideas. Go back to work with these, Keith. See how they come out.
I'm sure it'll go well.
You know, I was looking at my my home brewing room today, you guys, and I was like, wow, I really need to sweep this place out.
Are there spiders and like dead roaches?
It's dead roaches. It's mostly a dead roach scene. You know, all my stuff's up off the floor, which is the great thing about having a home brewing room and that you can get things up off the floor. So the dead roaches are just down
also,
there by themselves.
Also, the home brewing is a great thing about having a room.
Yeah. I don't know. I like to store all the empty glass bottles and just look at them. It's like I just go in.
I can imagine them being full of homebrew one day.
I don't want to corrupt them. Then I have to wash them again. It's just a mess. You know, whenever we talk about beers that are interesting, and that Rosemary Swamp Fox, you know, I read a book a year or so ago that was about, you know, kind of going out foraging for your beer and all this. And I loved that idea. It sounded so great. I'm like, I ain't got time for that. I ain't got time to go for the woods and find things for my beer. I'm going to put some poison in my beer and kill everybody because I don't know what to get. That seems like a horrible idea. But whenever I think about something simple like that, I'm like, oh, that would be a nice way to dress up a simpler beer. Yeah. That's probably a pretty simple recipe that I would do. And I'm just going to dress it up with something. I need to do it. If you have ideas for a beer that I need to brew, it's nice. Every now and then we get somebody on Twitter or whatever. It's like, hey, you know, I'm just starting home brewing. What's a good beer for me to start off with? And I've got a couple like from our website or, you know, that I'll throw to them like, hey, here's one. It's like four ingredients. It's super nice. I probably need to brew one of those again. Just be like, this is fun. Yeah, this isn't that big of a deal. I don't know. But at the same time, I'm just ready for Raymond to brew so I can come over and brew on his new system because I'm super psyched about it. Also, I'm excited to be invited over to service to do a special brew drink run brew for the tap room. That's happening, right?
Can't wait.
Sure.
Great. All right. Done. Do it, says Keith.
We can get that out for Savannah Craft Beer Week, right?
Well, it's a little late for
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think we might need to have come up with the idea by now.
Yeah, probably so. But anyway, we are, speaking of service, and that's what obviously for the longtime listeners where Keith works. The Service 3 came out a couple weeks ago. You know, we're talking about this. And around town, his hit distribution, you can pick up those bottles around. You can check out brewdrinkrun.com this week for a review of that beer.
Oh,
so
good,
that'll be great.
I didn't do one. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for doing that for me.
No worries. Well, it's
your birthday. Yeah. Happy birthday.
No, that was last week.
Last week was my
birthday. Last week was his birthday. Please stop messing with the space-time continuum that is all our podcast works. And by this week, I don't mean the week of Keith's birthday. I mean in the future.
And by this week, I actually mean there will absolutely be a different beer review on Monday. Please go back and enjoy the review from last week.
I feel like some magic has been lost. I feel like we need to reclaim it while we talk about running the curtain. It's fine to pull back the curtain sometimes. Not now.
We don't need to invite them like under the covers though.
They'll steal our secrets.
Yeah. That's your other podcast ripping off.
I think the paint fumes are getting to Raymond. He's getting paranoia over here.
Oh, boy. Hey, Raymond, how's your running going?
I have been thinking about it lately.
Off to a great start.
Been having dreams about running?
That's how it started.
I know. I've been having, like, I've been stressing about running because I realized not too long ago that the Dogfish Dash is coming up.
Which
like
you
a couple of weeks,
are going
which I
to.
Registered for.
Well, you have registered for. Are you going to it?
I don't know. At this point, now I got to tell you, it's not because I don't want to go. I'd love to go and run it. But life is getting in the way. I'm starting a new job, and I just got to see if I can make it happen. It's not about the actual run. I'd love to do that. It's about the getting to and getting back and in a reasonable amount of time.
So remind us all about the Dogfish Dash. Obviously, Dogfish Head up in Milton, Delaware.
Yep,
and. An off-centered distance for off-centered people?
Yes, it is not your normal 5K or 10K. It is an 8K. Runs through to the town of Milton, starts and ends at the brewery. So there's beer involved, of course, at the end. And sounds like a blast. I've wanted to run it for years and finally decided I could do it and had the time for it. And then I got a new job. So we'll see if that happens. But
Work that in when the interview. You'd be like, hey, I really want to do this, but then we got like, that Dogfish Head Dash. I got to do that this year.
Is your registration transferable?
I don't know.
Interesting. You should find out. We should have a giveaway on the podcast.
Well, don't be giving away my run just yet.
I'm just saying, it sounds like you're not going. It sounds like right now you're laying the groundwork for not going.
Once you start making these little excuses, we pretty much know you're not homebrewing or
follow us on Instagram at Bruge and Crun to find out how you can win Raymond's entry into the Dogfish Dash. Remember, this is the future, so things could all change.
Yes,
this is true.
Well, I have been running, you guys.
Oh. How about that?
And it has stunk. It is. We are deep in Augie Doggy this month. August is for reals where we live. It is hot. It is regularly 110 degree with the heat index, or the humidity, factoring the humidity to how hot it is. It has been hot, which luckily it's also back to school time, you guys. Ding, ding, ding for us.
Yep. Yeah.
Not everybody. Some people don't go back to school until after Labor Day. You guys, your school and weather report brought to you this week by the Dogfish Dash. Run the Dogfish Dash in Milton, Delaware this sometime. All right. So so kids been going back to school, which means I'm getting up soups early because school starts super early for middle schoolers and kids for some reason. And because of that, I'm getting up and I'm running at 6 o'clock in the morning, which is the only time you can do it this time of year that you don't die.
Yep.
And so because I'm just getting back into it, it's not super successful. I got to tell you, it is. I remember taking a week off and it being hard to get back into it. And with this, I've continued to be physical, but running is its own beast, especially when you're post 40. So it is knees and ankles and, you know, everything else magnified into the fact that I haven't been doing this respiratory stuff with the heat and the humidity. And it's a beast. And so I'm going out, I'm doing my 5K plus, so 3 to 4 mile, and running more than half of it. But there are a lot of walking steps in there. But I have seen really quick health benefits just from the last 2 weeks of going out 3 days a week and pushing it. Like I technically feel better and I technically have lost weight in just a couple of weeks because it's running when it is this darn hot and humid. Like there's no option. Like your body just drops it because it's miserable. I mean, you're paying a price for it, but it's a way to work. After months and months of just walking the 4 miles, nothing. 2 weeks of running, and it's running half that distance, and it's just like falling off because I sweat like a beast. It's probably all water weight. I will take it.
Yep.
There's a delightful old man I see on my walks in the mornings who wears a full, like the wrestling weight dropping suits, which are like trash bags. Like they are the plastic sacks.
That doesn't work, does it?
Dude, this dude is out doing it every day. I don't know what he looks like underneath it.
Because Missy Elliott?
I see him every time wearing it, and he's got a cane, and he's out there walking.
In the trash bag suit?
In the trash bag suit.
Crazy.
Every day we speak. And he's working hard, man, and I hope it's working for him, because I can't imagine how it's not. Not advocating trash bag suits on Bridger and Crown, by the way.
I mean, I've just, every time I see those, I'm like, that has got to be a gimmick.
Oh,
it's got to be a gimmick. A
monster.
Right?
He apparently believes in it. We're going on 6 months of seeing each other every morning.
He's always in a trash bag suit?
Always in the trash bag suit. I hope he listens. Shout out to trash bag suit guy.
Yeah, man. You got like, trash bag, what's up, buddy?
I think it's about time to start running, man. Like, you know, I've seen you for 6 months. You walk it. I get it. I think you could probably start running now. I'm doing it. Change your route. You know, we pass each other going opposite directions. go the other way. We can be going the same directions. I want to run with you, trash bag suit guy. If you're listening, this is a Craigslist misconnection. Hey, trash bag suit guy.
You wearing trash bag, walking with Kane.
Change your route. Walk the
guy,
other
guy sweating
direction.
And swearing as he runs.
Oh my God. Just complaining about the knees the whole darn time. It's tough, man. Oh, one last athletic related thing.
Okay.
All right, so you've been biking. You talked about cycling some on the show. What is your seat like, your cycling seat? Is it, how would you describe your saddle, as they say in cycling lingo?
All right, so my bike, the I recently got a new bike. And when I did, I went in.
Bragger. All right, I know it was a hurricane. Hurricane, blah, blah, blah. I'm so tired of hearing this. Yes, you got a new bike. Ugh. Mr. Moneybags over here.
So when I went in, I'd had the long conversation because I had a big ride coming up with my son's Boy Scout troop. And so I wanted something that was going to be super comfortable, but at the same time, and be able to do that. But at the same time, you know, 99% of the time, I'm maybe biking downtown in Savannah, which is super flat. So they actually ended up recommending something that is closer to a cruiser than to your regular kind of road bike.
Tell me more.
So the saddle that I have, to use the lingo there, is actually one of those big cushiony ones. It is not anywhere close to a road bike, but the bike is closer to that than, but it's built to ride around on. And
does it have a hole for your balls?
Nope.
So, which leads me to my thing here.
Yeah, he went right, there.
Like, look,
and now Keith is all in. So
learn things about saddles I never knew.
Tell me more. All right, so I've got, I do not have a new bike. I have my same Trek 700 series bike. That is, they call it a hybrid. So it's in between a road bike and not a mountain bike, but it's a commuter bike is kind of the thing. So it's not as sleek and meant for racing. It's somewhere below that. And so this is TMI. I have had a problem, and I want to hear from listeners. Anybody who's had the same problems been able to beat it. I've had a problem where my boy parts go numb on rides of like 10 miles or more. I'm asleep feeling like you've had your legs crossed too long, but not in your legs. So I started researching different saddles, and I found one on Amazon that was a reasonable enough. Let's just try this price that basically has this hole in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. and it's supposed to relieve pressure, which I wasn't having necessarily pressure. Yeah. I was comfortable, but I was like, I need to try something else because obviously something is not right here. Right. This should not be happening. I should probably actually talk to my friends who cycle instead of put it on a podcast. But I'm glad there's a record of this. If you have the same problem, I need to form a self-help group. So I got the saddle, and it does have like a full cutout in the middle, but it's a narrow cutout. It's not like anybody's genitalia is going to go down into this hole and fall through. But I'm like, I see how it would relieve pressure, right? Mm-hmm. So I switch out the seat, the saddle from my my regular saddle that came with the bike, and it's not as wide as my original saddle, which I don't care for. Not that I have a bedunkadunk. I have a pretty petite bottom. And
what are we doing?
And it's,
we're just gone. It's over.
And it's spongy. Look, I'm looking for help. Call my
what's
help
spongy
line.
Or badonkadonk?
No, the seat is spongy, but not.
Is iTunes even going to accept this at this
I'll
point?
I'll put the explicit tag on. It doesn't matter.
Are we gonna name this one Numbnuts?
Okay. Look, whatever's going to give me the help that I need, I'm signing up for. But there's something about it. Like, my old seat was springy and wider. Not like a beach cruiser. It's not wide like a beach cruiser seat. I mean, it's much more slender than that. I rode on the new saddle. Let me get to the gist of this. I rode on the new saddle. Same thing happened. Same damn thing happened with my $18 cheapy Amazon saddle that I bought that I thought would fix this problem because all these other people were talking about how great it feels on their boy parts. I'm going to call it boy.
In these testimonials, where did they say their parts went numb? So that's
it's
why
it's so hard to find information about this, guys. I mean, it's really like because
maybe could it be positioning or something like that?
Does it
like
need to tilt it forward?
Well, no, like not even just the seat of you. Maybe handlebars too low, too high, blood going in a different direction
Listen
for
to the
some
man.
Reason.
He knows what he's talking about.
I did
right?
definitely check the seat height. Because I did there are all these like online calculators of like your seat height, the Le Monde method. There are several methods of how to adjust your seat. So my saddle is correct in my height. Now you can also tilt your saddle forward or back or more neutral. I haven't started playing with that yet. Anyway, long story short, I don't like this new saddle. It's junk. I like my old saddle.
Well, put it back on.
I'm going to put old saddle
and
on.
And start adjusting things.
And start just moving it around. If you got tips for me and my saddle and my numb nuts, feel free to let us know. Give us a call. Email us at team@brewdrinkrun.com. Send us some pictures of how your saddle's set up. I want to know. I need to know how to fix my problem because I like riding my bike. I got some new cycling shorts. I got a new cycling jersey. I like all these things. I want a bike more, but I don't like the feeling that I have when I've been out for these, not even long rides. It's not like I'm doing 30 miles. Like I have friends who do like 30, 40 miles. They don't have this problem. They go 40 miles. I can't go 10 miles without just like coming home and being a wreck, a total emotional mess at the end of this. it's really frustrating. Oh, I'm getting no sympathy from either of you, so I'm just going to go to the next segment of the podcast.
And what about reading? There's a leisure time activity that will help you learn things you'd like to know about many subjects.
Raymond's Book Corner.
I need to edit that again with me laughing over Raymond laughing and Keith kind of chuckling and Keith kind of shuffling and getting up out of his seat. It's the time of the show. We turn to Raymond's Book Corner. Raymond is our reader. Reader Raymond. He likes to read books and he also likes to listen to audiobooks. He's going to give us a recommendation of a title and we can find out more about it. And you can get a free copy of it if it's available. I have no idea. Audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun and have somebody famous maybe read it to you. Or you can go to Amazon.com or click on, actually go to brewdrinkrun.com. Look at this episode show notes. Click on the link for Amazon.com. Oh boy. How about you just buy this book and then you just tell like, can you send a telegram with money? Just telegram us some money. Here we go. What have you got this week, Raymond?
All right. I have a book by Dennis Dutton, who is quite an active guy. He's been a curator and given TED Talks and all these sorts of things. He wrote a book called The Art Instinct, Beauty, Pleasure, and Human Evolution, in which he argues that there are all sorts of evolutionary science things that come together and kind of determine what or how we define what is beautiful in the world. And ultimately he kind of ties it back to the arts and how we recreate these kinds of things that are built into our genetics. We look for these certain patterns. We find these certain patterns attractive because somewhere down the road, we got some benefit for them, evolutionarily speaking. And now we try to reproduce them in our arts and our designs and that sort of thing.
Interesting. So is this a book that you have a paper copy of that you've read?
Yeah, actually read this one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had someone else read it to you. I bet this is the kind of thing. I mean, it's obviously nonfiction. It's based on observation, anecdotal, and I'm sure some studies as well, like interwoven throughout. How is it? I mean, like, so as you read this, did this just reaffirm kind of some of your artistic instincts, or did it actually challenge any of them or change any of them?
It did kind of reaffirm a couple of things, just that a lot of the patterns that we deal with are very much ingrained in our environment. One of the fun parts about the book that I did, my favorite section, there's this pair of artists called Komar and Melamed. They're actually originally Russian, and they now live in Europe somewhere. And they did, a couple of years ago, they did a survey. They went around the world and they interviewed people about what they liked. And then they would do a painting that represented what each country or which each area looked like, or what the survey results were. And they were invariably the most popular painting was this one of, your kind of Bob Ross painting with a valley scene with water in it and mountains and trees and maybe some animals or those sorts of things. And his thing is that's because that is an appealing thing, because it shows that at a place where there's access to water, which is a necessity, animals, which is a necessity, wood, which provides more environment for animals that we want, and shelter, potential shelter, mountains kind of contains things, being in a valley, these sorts of things. So that we are, even if you were to interview, and this was the most popular painting amongst Americans too, was this very typical landscape. He ties all of this stuff together to that this was what we looked for when we were cavemen.
Interesting.
Or primates even.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting stuff. You know, some of these kind of art theory books go a little off on long tangents, and I wonder somewhere if they break down a little bit, but, if you keep to kind of the core of things, I think that there's something going on there.
There's a forum post called Numbnuts. They say that all is fine while I'm cycling, but getting off my bike, my balls and my penis are both numb. I'm wearing padded shorts. Is this normal, or should I look to change my saddle? There's a lot of information there.
Glad you looked this up during the podcast, not before.
My favorite answer to this is massage your penis and testicles as soon as you get off the bike. For more about massaging, for more of. Look, I was listening to you, I promise. That was a very good answer. For more about Dennis Dutton's The Art Instinct, the beauty, pleasure, and human evolution, you can go to brewdrinkrun.com, click on this episode's show notes, and find a link to buy this book at amazon.com, or go to audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun and see if that is available there. I have no idea if it is or not. We will be right back. Thanks for listening. I really appreciate you, each of you. Seriously, a really thoughtful answer, Raymond. Thank you for doing that. I kind of felt like a real interviewer for a second, because you're like, oh, yeah, that's a good question. Let me think about how I should answer that. And I started looking up numbnuts again. Look, I blame myself. I don't blame anybody else.
Hey, man, if you're having that problem with your nuts, I think it's going to be something you're focused on.
Yeah, all right. Thanks. Thanks, Keith. It's not often I get information from Keith. When I do, I feel...
You take it, man.
I'm going to take that. The second half of our show here, we are going to enjoy another beer. Keith is pouring. He is being very judicious in lining up amounts of liquid that are poured in everyone's glasses. I have the longest drive home, so he's taking care of me by having a shorter pour, which is good.
It is available on Audible. The Art Instinct. By Dennis Dutton.
Oh, we're not talking about that now.
I'm just letting you know. It's narrated by PJ Auchlin.
I love PJ Auchlin. PJ Auchlin. That song,
that Rhythm Me.
Yeah,
that album was awesome.
Four track demos. There's a big. I mean, do you like Rhythm Me or do you like four track demos? I mean, that's like that's how you decide what kind of person you are. Is kind of how I judge all people. Are you a Rhythm Me or a four track demos person? Because
what if you like both?
then you're just a super fan. Okay. I got to tell you, I like both. I actually prefer Rid of Me. Anywho, we are back with our favorite 50-foot Queenie. Keith, what are we drinking first?
Welcome back to PJ Harvey Talk.
Get as many PJ Harvey references in as we can before the end of the show. It's a challenge. Boy. All right. Well, to bring you my love, here is... And beer is my love. Mystic. We have a beer from Mystic. Is it Mystic Brewing Company or just Mystic? Mystic Brewery, maybe. Anyways, this is Luminous Ruins. It's a dry hopped sour ale. Comes in at 4.3% ABV. They do give you some kind of like batch number on here, but it really doesn't correlate to a year or anything. I'm not sure what you're supposed to do with that. But this is a brewery from Chelsea, Massachusetts. So up there in the Northeast. And this beer, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit before. It came out of the Rare Beer Club, which is there's many levels and many levels of rareness to the Rare Beer Club. My boss, Kevin, who runs Service Brewing Company, is a member of that. And once a month or so, a box shows up, and he's very, very generously either just brings Austin and I a bottle from that, something he just wants us to try other things, different things, maybe things that we can't get our hands on, just kind of keep us up to date on what's going on in the world. Sometimes we get to choose which one we prefer, and sometimes a bottle is just handed to me, so it's always nice to get these. It's great. So this one is called Luminous Ruins from Mystic.
Luminous Ruins. That sounds very exotic. I am totally excited to try it. So, Raymond, take a look at this bottle. Describe this bottle to us. I wouldn't describe it as man size. I'd probably describe it as a 750 milliliter.
As a 750 milliliter.
Great.
Pretty sharp looking label here. Very straightforward. Kind of some warm yellows up against a blue-gray background with white lettering. The imagery here is this, it's kind of a horizon line set, and then there's a cityscape. I'm guessing...
Stories from the city, stories from the sea.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
This will probably be a city story, from the looks of it.
I'm just guessing Boston.
All right, come on, Billy. Let's work together. Yes!
Keep it up. Is there anybody, can you go down by the water on that label, or is it all just...
Actually, yes, it looks like a city reflection in the water.
Thank you.
It's kind of a nice, it's a good graphic label, very striking. I like it a lot. Very simple, but good looking.
We also have it poured into glasses. Can you give us a description of what it looks like in a glass?
Absolutely. Very pale yellow. Mine's cloudy. Looks like cloudy Keith's too. Even more cloudy than mine.
I did sort of top myself probably off with the last of the bottle. There, yeah. So I got the yeast in the bottom there.
But a pretty, very kind of bright, warm beer here.
Yep. Real funky aroma.
Funky
is about the way I'd... there's a fruitiness going on, but it's very...
A little bit of B.O.?
Maybe, yeah.
It's that kind of thing. Yeah. A little bit of the Sweat Sox gym kind of a smell, which, you know, again, is not bad. It's just
it's funk. It's just kind of got that funky, kind of sweaty thing going on. But there is a little bit of fruitiness, so I'm not sure. They don't tell you what it's dry hopped with, so I'm going to guess something, maybe a little bit of melon in there as well. You know, that kind of that kind of thing. But I don't know what hop it is, but there's obviously some fruit character going on in it. It's to say it's pleasant, I think, is wrong, but it's definitely in with that, so...
All right.
Guys, this is so good.
There's a lot going on here. There's a lot to unpack. Mm. So where do we start?
It's got a sweetness to it, but there's a definite tart element there. It is not like pucker. We talk about that clench at the back of your throat.
No.
Doesn't have that going on.
It does not.
Just very kind of sweet, tarty, but it's much more complex than sweet tart. It's not just candy.
A lot of fruit, and I can't quite place exactly what fruit it is. It's got almost like this. It reminds me a lot of kumquat. So you got that.
That's
kind
a good one.
Because it's really tart on the in the fruit, but that kind of sweet, and it doesn't really necessarily orangey, but that's what it kind of reminds me of, where you kind of get that very abrasive combination of the really sweet and the tart.
I was thinking nectarine, like the yeah, bitter that's skin good. And the sweetness in there. But
kumquat is so stupid specific, but it's perfect. It's yeah. I mean, it's that kind of the immature fruit kind of thing that it has, and the pithiness of it, and again, the tart
except,
and the sweet.
I don't get
together.
I don't get orange. I still get kind of like a melony thing going on, even in the taste a little bit. Like,
I can get that. Yeah.
I mean, it's not. And I'm not a big melon. I mean, I like watermelon fine, but I'm not a big, you know, cantaloupe or honeydew or that kind of thing. But I really like what's going on in the taste of this quite a bit. It's kind of it's got a refreshingness to it, and it's light, but it's so potent and powerful at the same time, which is a nice combination.
Yeah.
I like this too. Good.
A dry hop sour ale. I mean, so we're talking about using wild yeast, and we're talking about adding extra hops to the fermentation to let some of that bitterness or earth, depending on the hops they're using, the earthiness or the bitterness come through, or even perhaps.
Well, I mean, dry hopping is usually an aroma thing more than. I mean, I find that a lot of beers.
That's true.
If I've had the beer before and I had a dry hop version, I do notice a change in taste, but it's really more about aroma. So I would say 90 to 95% of what you're getting is in the taste has nothing to do with the dry hopping at all. But that doesn't say, I think a little bit might come through. I mean, you're still adding hops into a beer that you're going to drink. I think no matter what point you do that, you can affect any aspect of that, but it's really about the aroma.
Yeah. This is interesting. I like this.
I like it too.
There's a lot going on, but I don't feel like it's too much going on. I feel like it all works together really well.
There's some pineapple happening in this one.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean,
for sure in this one.
Every time I take a sip, there's some fruit out there that I've had that I want to say this tastes like. Well, if it's passion fruit, if it's like, you know, that guava. There are things that I don't have a ton of experience with, you know, lychees, you know, that kind of thing. And there's all these fruits that I'm not hugely familiar with, but I've had on occasion, you know, had a chance to try or to have involved with another beer, and it's all these fruits that I'm tasting that are on the fringe of my everyday knowledge, you know.
Bottle conditioned house yeast, 4.3% ABV.
Not very
super low. This is something that you could enjoy with lunch. You could, you know, I mean, obviously it's a big bottle. You want to share it. Yeah. It would be, but I feel like the only thing that would keep me from drinking the whole bottle actually kind of is the complexity, is the fact that it's so interesting, which is a weird thing to say. It's good and I enjoy it, a whole bottle of it. Because a lot of beers, when I say I wouldn't want a 750, it's because maybe it's too sweet, maybe it's too sour or whatever else. But there's something about the combination here that I really do enjoy, but I feel like a single pour is right.
There are very few sours that I want to drink 750 milliliters of in general. That said, I think I could easily drink this bottle. The ABV,
I'm with you on that.
Wouldn't really isn't going to slow you down, and it's not so tart and sour that it's making me feel like it's going to. I mean, and I guess it could. I mean, it would be a shame to get halfway through and decide you couldn't finish it, but. I'm not getting that initial, like, you know, heartburn-y kind of acid thing in the, you know, in the throat and in the esophagus that you kind of get with some of these big, huge sours. I think this is really drinkable for a sour. I mean, with something that's literally called a sour ale on the label. I mean, this is incredibly, it's one of those beers that it's potent in its sourness to an extent, but it's still kind of approachable. This is probably one of the more extreme, intense sours that I still feel is approachable for someone who maybe doesn't drink sours. The initial sip would be such a huge shock. They'd have to get past that and then get into a couple of more, and I think they might enjoy it, you know?
I do agree that it's approachable, for sure. I don't have that lockjaw thing happening with this. I don't have any of the real clenching, which some of the really, really tart sours kind of convey. And I think that it's just that it's more than just the sour. Mm-hmm. You know, that you do get these other elements of it that come through. It's not just a tartness, not a raw tartness.
Yeah.
There's more going on here.
And like Raymond said, it's not just like a sweet tart, which is enjoyable.
It is.
You know, that kind of, oh, this is like tart and sweet. It's like a sweet tart candy. This is great. You know, that's fun. And, you know, there's a lot of beers out there that are like that. And they're very good beers. But this one does have a lot, maybe not a lot of complexity, but it's what's there with each sip. I'm not tiring of it. I go back and I kind of want another one. I want another one.
All right. Well, we've said our piece. It's time to go to the real experts, the internet.
To beer or not to beer, it's time for Beer Review Theater.
It's Beer Review Theater. Beer Review Theater, we go to the internet, we find a review of our grand tasting here, and we present it back to you. Today we're going to Mindcrime 1000. Mindcrime 1000 over at Beer Advocate. Mindcrime 1000 gave this beer a 4.5 out of 5. A look of 4.5, a smell of 4.5, a taste of 4.5, a feel of 4.5. Guess what? An overall of 4.5.
Sounds legit. Yep.
With a name like Mindcrime 1000, I can only imagine that this is Jeff Tate, former lead singer of the prog metal band.
Former. Is he Queensryche defunct?
Queensryche. Well, Queensryche is still around, but without Jeff.
Oh, I didn't.
Without Jeff Tate. Of Queensryche.
There is no need to keep doing that.
Yeah, right. Well, Jeff tours as himself.
Well, that's... I'm glad he's touring as himself.
Formerly of Queensryche.
Not as somebody else.
You may know Queensryche from such hit songs as Silent Lucidity.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was that Operation Mindcrime record.
Brilliant. That album's brilliant.
Yeah, it's a great record. And then they also have a Mindcrime Part 2, which I don't think anybody
which is
really...
much less than brilliant.
Going back to the well. So
you couldn't find a PJ Harvey person, could you?
You know, what a great idea, but no.
All right.
I don't think so.
We don't have time.
Yeah, no Sean time. Money here. I don't think I could make that. Pours a hazy straw gold with a great foamy head that gives way to excellent champagne-like bubbles, an excellent lacing throughout. Aromas of banana and pineapple are balanced by lemony citrusy notes and white pepper spiciness. In the background, vinous and oaky aromas are lurking, well-balanced and bright. It becomes more and more complex to the nose as it warms. The acidity is forward as promised, but not overwhelming. Unlike the nose, the citrus, lemon, and grapefruit is the star, with the esters taking a back seat, though peach and pineapple are there. The hops and spiciness provide grassy, horsey, funky farmhouse excellence. Finally, the barrel aging provides the oaky, vinous notes that are very welcoming. Like the aroma, it gets more and more complex as it warms. The mouthfeel is outstanding, light, crisp, fresh, and eminently drinkable. The carbonation is perfect. This isn't a token sour bomb. It's true.
It's more like Little Sweet than...
Yeah, it is. I can't do what he does. I can't do what he does.
Yeah, I'm that's why he's Jeff Tate. Yeah.
It's true to its farmhouse roots.
Well, I get what you're doing there.
Well, providing that. A sour citrus punch that makes it unique but very drinkable. Highly recommendable. If you can track it down. It is more sweet. I was definitely going more glam there, but I just, yeah. I can't. I mean, he's a screamer and a crooner. Like, I don't know.
Wait, but his screaming is very distinctly him. He's the only one who screams in that way. So.
That's true. I don't even know why I tried.
I mean,
that.
if you were going for...
That was fun.
That was many generic heavy metal singers, but
it
yeah,
was.
And I got with, and I like the deep because as it just be going deep.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, he does that's that kind
true.
Of deep stuff.
That's true. Well, it's basically that one song.
yeah, it's true. But
yeah, I'm. Sorry.
It's the most. It's the one everyone knows. So
I'm just sorry. I'm sorry
Jeff,
for
Jeff.
Lots of
if
things.
You listen to this, please.
He probably does.
Send me a signed copy of Operation Mindcrime 1, not 2.
I can't imagine he's doing anything else. So final thoughts. Jesus, I already talked about my balls. Now I tried to imitate Jeff Tate. Arguably,
and then threw him under the bus.
Yeah, I did. I did lots of bad things this episode. I feel like you guys came out looking great. And I had nothing to be proud of.
Well,
so
at least now you know it's okay to massage your junk after your ride.
I didn't need that guy's approval. Let me just tell you right now, I did not need that guy's approval. So, what are our final thoughts on Luminous Ruins from Mystic?
I really like it. I think this guy maybe had more time to sit and really think about it. Maybe I would get some more specific of those fruit notes and whatnot. But I like this a lot. I wish it was available all the time in a 4-pack or something.
Yeah, agree. I think this is lovely. I'd sit and drink this all the time. I'd have this in the refrigerator. It's really good.
Are you surprised that the Beer Advocate score is an 86?
Very.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little low. I see this not being everybody's cup of tea, but
yeah,
folks who review beer. And
I mean, 86 is the 86 is interesting. I don't know what the expectations
it's a
were.
Weird no man's land. 86.
There's correlations in people's mind to ABV versus quality and stuff like that. But I think this is really good beer. I like it.
I agree. I would totally drink this again, and I would be happy to share it with you bros again because you're my bros. That's. All right, I got nothing back. For more about us and Brewjig Run, I put myself out there. I was
we've been talking about private parts a little bit too much.
I needed some affirmation. I got nothing. For more about us and Brewjig Run, I don't care. There's brewjigrun.com. There's Twitter. There's Facebook. I don't care. Instagram. I definitely don't care about Untappd. If you want to be a part of the show, you can email us, but I don't care if you do. It's team@brewjigrun.com. Please tell me you're my friend, or you'll be my friend, or you can, I don't know, just respond. Let us know about your home brewing, your running training, your numbnuts, or your favorite place to grab a beer. You can also call us at 781-76-DRINK and tell us about your story, about your parts. We've got Brewjig Run t-shirts and technical running shirts available at our website. Click on the store link. Our theme music is provided by our friends at Morning Lights. Thanks for joining us. I won't see you around. Bye. Cheers.
Cheers.
Can we do this?
All numbnut stories will become property of Brewjig Run.
Or Jeff Tate. He may sue us for that.
Yeah, he may. He's going to own us before long.
Oh, I'm not stopping. Is this the concept album about nuns, or is that the other one?
This is the one. Yeah, this is one of my favorite rock opera-y kind of albums. It's great. Back to front. This album is amazing. Yeah.
Is this PJ Harvey?
Yeah, as you were naming her songs earlier. Yeah, yeah. Yes, you obviously know a lot about her. Yeah. All right. So next time. See that? That's nice. That's what I was trying to channel. I obviously cannot do a very good job. I promise to try better next time, I guess.